Welcome to Leading the Next Generation with Tim Elmore, where our mission is to empower the emerging generations with skills to lead in real life. Welcome back, podcast listeners. We are so excited to be here. And with me, as always, is Dr. Tim Elmore. How are you, Tim?
I'm very well. Awesome. And you today?
I'm doing great. Good.
It's going to be a fun conversation.
It is. Yeah, I'm excited about this conversation because it is a topic. Frankly, we don't even have to talk about it. We go around places and hear other people talking about it because of how urgent of a need is this conversation around digital citizenship. In a lot of ways, it's sort of like the etiquette of the 21st century.
Yeah.
Now, etiquette is still around, right? But etiquette used to be a really big deal. And you and I were kind of talking before we pressed record today about the different etiquette experiences that we might have had growing up. And to me, I think it's an interesting parallel to what we're talking about today. So maybe we can dig into that.
Yeah. Well, I have friends that have put their children, their kids, into cotillion courses
where they learn
the proper way to greet and the fork is on the left and all this other stuff. I never had a course like that.
Yeah.
I could have used a course like that.
Yeah, I see you put your fork on the wrong side all the
time. Well, and it offends so many people. But I have a memory growing up. I wasn't awful, but I was a guy that I remember the first high school dance that I was qualified to go to in high school.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know how to dance. And so I'm kind of practicing in my room, you know, kind of doing a little move here.
I can envision that.
My older sister walks by and goes, no, no. And so Lisa, my older sister, gives me a few quick dance lessons because I desperately needed them. But I was just a bit aloof about many things when it comes to what's proper. So dance lessons weren't all I needed. One time when I was younger, this is totally off the script here, but
I'm okay with that.
Stephanie and I were both in elementary school. She was my next door neighbor, and I kind of liked her.
Okay.
And she kind of liked me. We were probably in the third grade. And Stephanie said, maybe we should get married. And I was alarmed because I said, Stephanie, I don't think we can get married because you're Catholic and I'm Republican. And of course, you know.
Those are, after all, two opposite ends of the same spectrum. So.
But you talk about your story because you had some. You're a generation younger than me.
I am, yeah. Which I mean, typically means that somebody has less etiquette training than others, or than you might have had, you know, 10 or 20 years before. That was certainly true for me. I didn't have any formal training or any of that kind of stuff. When I think about etiquette today and my experiences growing up, it was really just the different things that my parents drilled into me. You know. Things like the proper way to handle yourself in certain social situations, how to give a great handshake. I remember that lesson, you know, looking people in the eye. That's a really important element of etiquette. Or growing up in the South, especially, yes, ma'am, yes, sir, no, ma'am, no, sir, to everyone, especially elders. In fact, even to this day, I will say yes, ma'am, yes, sir, no, sir, to people who are far younger than me because it's just the way that you're supposed to interact with other people. And so I find myself, even still to this day, those are habits that are ingrained into me. And that was really kind of the driving force, the driving reason behind etiquette in the first place, right? It was that idea of, well, if we work on them, work on them, then we're going to build skills and they're just going to naturally react in really healthy ways later on in life.
Well, when I think about the bottom line of etiquette, whether it's what we're going to talk about today, digital etiquette or citizenship, what's helpful about it is when we're young, we don't know what we're doing.
Yeah.
We think we do, but we really don't. Yeah. And it's a little bit of a track to run it, like when you your dad teaches you how to shake hands and look somebody in the eye. Oh, now I know how to do that when I meet a 38-year-old and I'm 12.
Yeah.
But the same is true with these screens in our life now.
Exactly.
And today, I want you to lead this conversation, but I'd like to talk about digital citizenship and what do we need to know as we train our kids.
Yeah.
So start in. I'd love you to just kind of set this up and then we'll go back and
forth. Well, this is a topic I've become really passionate about because I see so many teachers and leaders and even have conversations with teachers and leaders who are really struggling helping their students figure out how to do this. One story I came across happened back in the fall of 2021. This is a teacher with 2 decades of experience by the name of Amanda Gardner, and she began That year of teaching, she had just transferred to a brand new charter school, so new students, but she's been at it for 2 decades. This is not a new job for her, just outside of Seattle, Washington. And she envisioned how this thing was going to go. I'm in a charter school. I'm going to get more time with my kids. It's going to be really great. And the reality that set in within just a couple of weeks in this school was that instead of having plenty of time to connect with her students and dig into her subject, she instead was spending tons of time addressing various conspiracy theories that her students had started buying into and bringing up in class. It turns out that they had been reading stuff online, didn't understand what they were reading, swallowed it hook, line, and sinker, right? And the really challenging thing was that it wasn't small stuff. It was big stuff. And so she's there to teach English, and instead she's having conversations about with kids who are saying, well, I heard that the Holocaust didn't even really happen, which is crazy. Or I heard this COVID-19 thing is a hoax. Or I heard the presidential election was rigged, or whatever the subject was of the day. And the reality, though, is I think it's not just the online conspiracy theories that kids are digesting that are causing the problems. There was actually another story I came across. This happened in December of 22. When a student at a community college, it was the Community College of Rhode Island, her name was Mae Murphy, and she actually was hired as a mystery shopper for Walmart. You'd know what that is, probably, if you've ever heard of mystery shopping. That is the idea where you are hired by a company to go and go into one of their stores and pretend to be you know, a shopper and kind of report back on your experience. Well, she had some questions about this new job she had just gotten before her first mystery shopping experience, and she reached out directly to Walmart to ask some questions. And Walmart responds, "We've never heard of you before." And it turns out that she had fallen victim to a scam. She had given them tons of personal information about herself, and they were just a few steps away from them being able to take money out of her bank account and a bunch of really scary things. And of course, this story goes viral, but it was just a reminder to me of this reality, which is just because our kids grew up online doesn't mean they understand how to move around in a healthy and even safe way in those online spaces.
That's exactly where we are, and that's the topic of our day. So I want you to go a little bit deeper, because we need to get practical. Everybody that just heard you said, yep, had that experience, know of somebody that had that experience. But talk about some of the challenges that lie in this digital etiquette citizenship world.
It's particularly for our young people today, because I think the reason this is such a really interesting, fascinating conversation is that we have this impression, there's sort of like a running cultural joke in our culture that the elderly people, the ones who grew up without the technology we have today, are going to be the ones who are most likely to fall victim to a scam. But it turns out, ironically, that is fake news. That's actually not true. So there was a report of fraud cases to the Federal Trade Commission, and they released basically all the fraud issues that had been released to them in the year 2021. And here's what they found. Individuals aged 70 to 79 reported losing money in 18% of the cases they reported.
Wow.
So about 18% of fraud cases involving those folks, they lost money. It turns out the folks who were ages 20 to 29, so much, much younger, they actually lost money in 41% of cases.
More than twice as much.
So in cases of fraud, they were far more likely to fall fully victim to this fraudulent activity. Now, they did say that when an older individual fell victim to fraud, they typically lost way more money than somebody in their 20s, and that's probably because they have way more money, you know.
Or did.
Or did at some point before the scam happened. But it is just a reminder to me that we've got to change the narrative on this. Our young people actually are vulnerable. Now, we've talked about their vulnerability on social media platforms for years, but I think we have to realize that their vulnerability extends way beyond that, right? Just because they grew up in digital spaces doesn't mean they know how to navigate these. So there was a September 2021 report in the British Journal of Developmental Psychology, and they found through a series of studies that it's really about age 14. That's the sweet spot where kids start to more easily believe unproven, even conspiratorial ideas.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a lot of times the reason this happens is because this is about the age where kids begin to be exposed at higher levels to more information. And at the same time, their minds are not fully developed. So we trust them a little more, give them more exposure. Their minds are still not developed. And so what can happen is a series of challenges.
Kids are ripe targets, aren't they, for fake news?
They really are.
Yeah.
Well, so there was a really fascinating study that went even deeper from Stanford University. This one was back in 2016. They did this with 8,000 high school age students in the United States, and they found that more than 80% of the middle school students that they worked with believed that an advertisement labeled as sponsored content was actually a news story.
Wow.
They didn't have the capacity. You've been on a website before, and you can tell what's an ad and what's a news story. It turns out that a lot of our middle schoolers can't. They also found with their high schoolers that a little less than 20% of high schoolers seriously question suspicious claims on social media. The example they used was a Facebook post that said images of these strange-looking flowers were located near a nuclear power plant in Japan, that it was proof that dangerous radiation levels existed in the area. Well, of course, that was fake news, but only a very small percentage, about 20%, even recognized that might not be true.
Yeah, right.
There was another component of it where college students were shown a Twitter post, and it was touting a poll favoring gun control. And it was saying, look how many people are in favor of this, but only a little more than two-thirds noticed that the company or the organization that was putting forward this information was actually kind of a liberal anti-gun group, right? So they didn't piece together the information that was being shared and who was sharing it. In other words, and you can see why this is such a big problem, as the world gets more and more complicated and moves more and more digital, we are, it seems, putting our kids in increasingly compromising situations.
At risk. We're putting them at risk. Yeah. So, Andrew, this is so good. You've set this up so well. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, I really want to talk about the matrix of digital citizenship.
Yeah, let's do it.
Hey, listeners, it's Cam. Are you concerned about the impact of technology on the generation you're leading today? Do you worry about the effects of artificial intelligence in your classroom? Then listen up, because here at Grind Leaders, we have an event that you won't want to miss. Our brand new virtual event, The AI Dilemma, How Schools Best Prepare Students for the Age of ChatGPT, will look into the interaction between technology, digital citizenship, and the well-being of this next generation. So, whether you're a concerned parent, an educator shaping young minds, or simply someone curious about the future, this event was made for you. Let's not let our students become merely a statistic in a future study. Instead, let's empower them together with the skills they need to be ready in a rapidly changing world. Register today for this virtual event, The AI Dilemma, How Schools Best Prepare Students for the Age of ChatGPT, and join us as we explore the importance of understanding the world as we know it and how to harness the power of AI for the betterment of society. Visit our website now for more details or click the link in the notes to register today. See you there.
All right. So we are back, and I now, Andrew, am intrigued as anybody listening, I think. Talk about the matrix that you kind of have either researched, uncovered, or developed. But this would be helpful for our listeners.
Yeah. When I was talking about, or really diving into the research around digital citizenship, what I realized is we need to kind of expand our definition of what it is, right? So in the same way that we grew up learning etiquette in various forms, I think we need to ask the question, what are the areas of etiquette that students need to develop as well? So I developed what I call a digital citizenship matrix. Okay. And have you ever seen a matrix before? It's basically just a diagram with four quadrants, right? And those four quadrants sort of overlap. And in this case, the overlapping ideas are that each of us interact in the virtual space in both publicly, meaning what we put out there is seen by others, as well as privately or personally, right? We do things and people don't know that we do them, right? So when we watch a YouTube video, nobody's like, hey, I saw you watch that YouTube video, right? That's sort of a private, personal action. Yeah. The other framework is our passive engagement with the digital world versus our active engagement in the digital world. So these things overlap, and at each of these overlaps, we have a different role that we play. And I just want to go through these really quickly to kind of give us context for what are the roles we're actually talking about and what might great digital citizenship look like in each of those roles.
Yeah, Well, Andrew, this is not relegated to teens. I was thinking that even young children, I think whenever you're introduced to new areas of technology, you're vulnerable because it's all new.
Yes.
I remember parents of elementary school age children and even toddlers when they got Alexa in the home. And the kids are going, ooh, I can yell at this girl.
Yeah.
I can be mean to her. And they were teaching, you can't be rude. I don't want you to be rude to Alexa. You'll do that outside the house.
Yeah, yeah.
And even though it seems silly, it's a kid just learning to use a machine, a smart technology machine.
So, it's an etiquette of a new sort, isn't
it? That is very true. So talk about this matrix and the areas we need to pay attention to.
So for each of us as a digital citizen of the world, and this is, like you said, not just teenagers, it's all of us, we have four roles.
Okay.
The first role I talk about is we are consumers in this digital space. And this is a personal world, and it's also passive, right?
Yes.
So active, I'm not active in this. It's sort of, each of us have mindlessly watched a YouTube video before, right? So when we consume things like videos, tweets, memes, GIFs, all those kinds of things, we have to ask ourselves the question, are we playing this role well? The key question with consuming is for students to ask themselves, as I consume content, am I growing myself or am I wasting away?
Yeah.
Right?
That's a good question.
A lot of us have spent I personally spent a long time on TikTok when it first downloaded, and I thought, this is not helpful for me,
right?
I got to put this away. I was over-consuming. Years ago, I heard you talk about the GIGO principle, garbage in, garbage out. That's what this is all about, right? If I consume garbage, things that's not really helping me grow, then that's what's going to kind of become manifest in my life.
No doubt. All right.
The second role is that we are creators, right? And this is another personal role, but this one, instead of being passive, is actually quite active, right?
Yes.
Each of our creative acts in the online space is necessarily active and thoughtful. I think it's important that we do not take our role of creativity lightly, whether we're posting a video on TikTok or contributing content as a comment on a post, right? As students post thoughts, trends, dance videos, reflections, all that kind of stuff, they should be asking this question, is my post driven by integrity or inconsistency?
Yeah.
Is what I'm saying online a reflection of who I want to be?
Yeah.
Or is this me kind of giving in to whatever it looks like is the in thing right now, right?
Yeah. What persona am I creating in the minds of others about me? What reputation am I accumulating by what I post?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's good.
By all means, we should have fun online, but when we do so, I think we should remain thoughtful.
No doubt.
And that's what I want to encourage our students to do as well.
Good.
So the third role that we play is in our reacting. And this is one of our public roles, but it's a passive public role that we make. So as we like, comment, and subscribe to other posts online, we are effectively elevating that content to a more prevalent place, right? The more content a piece of content is liked or shared, the more people are going to see it. This is obvious on sites like Reddit, where an upvote lifts that post up to the top of the page. But I think this same effect is taking place on any social media site with an algorithm. And so I just want kids to be thoughtful about how do they react to the stuff of other people. The key question for us is, am I liking and following content that is positive and uplifting or negative and hurtful?
It's a huge question.
Yeah. And so much of online bullying, which is a really big topic, is allowed to happen because there's a whole mass of people who don't handle this reacting thing well, right?
Yeah, yeah.
If every time a bully posted, there were 7 comments underneath it that said, that's not right, you need to take this down, I think a bullying behavior would drop, right?
Yeah.
But we're not often taking this reacting role very seriously. So the final role, Tim, is promoting. And this one is both public as well as active. And this is where we go beyond just liking something. Promoting means I'm retweeting, reposting, even reshaping content. But effectively what I'm doing is I'm aligning my own personal brand with some other brand.
That's right.
Right? And I think when you're doing that, you got to make thoughtful choices. So the key question here is, am I promoting content that is supporting people and causes that I align my values with? Or am I spreading content that actually isn't consistent with who I say I want to be? So you might agree with one single post a user shares, but are you ready to promote the person along with the post is the question I'm really asking. So those are kind of the four main roles that each of us play.
You're really pushing all of us and the end user, which is a teenager perhaps in our lives, to think beyond myself.
Yes.
Adolescence, I was like this too as a teen. Think about ourselves a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, in fact, today is specifically in a world of selfies and you know, all the posts that we tend to do. It's about ourselves and the meal we just ate and everything else. And I'm thinking, what you're doing is pushing maturation, which means I'm thinking of others as I open my mouth or use my thumbs on a portable device.
Absolutely. And that's really what I'm we need to bring awareness to these concepts. Yeah. And that's really step one. I'm about to give some practical advice.
Yeah.
But frankly, the first piece of advice is we got to bring these roles to the spotlight.
Yeah.
And go, what role are you playing? Mm-hmm. How are you handling each of these roles that you have? It's so much like etiquette, right? If nobody ever sits down and goes, hey, here's how people think when you don't shake their hand or don't look them in the eye, that's going to make me go, oh, do I want to be perceived that way, right? And my awareness of what's going on helps me better know how to play my role well.
Zero doubt about that.
Yeah.
Hundo P.
Hundo P, as they say.
Okay. So talk for just a few minutes about the three biggest needs that you would see in digital citizens.
Yeah. So this is where I want to get really practical with everybody is I've talked about these four roles. We need to understand these four roles. But I think when you think about how what's going to allow students to handle these roles well, you easily can recognize that we've got to give our students some skills in order to navigate these. And we talk about skills all the time here at Growing Leaders. So just like you and I learned about eye contact or how to give a great handshake, how to make polite small talk, students today need similar skills that are going to help them thrive in their online interactions.
Yeah.
So I want to give you these three skills. And if you don't mind, I'm just going to jump right in.
No, I'd love it. Let's do it.
Along the way, I'm going to give you some really practical advice about how to do this too. So skill number one is I think every student has to have a strong understanding of their own identity. And really, this is self-awareness.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's essential before a student can become a full participant in the very powerful and influential world of social media and the internet, they've got to understand who they are, right? Because when somebody is insecure or lacking self-awareness, they feel more vulnerable and inferior in some ways, and they're more open to going along with things that aren't consistent with who they really are, right? Yeah. But if they're emotionally secure, it means that they're stable, right? Mm-hmm. And even in the face of challenging, confusing, conflicting situations online, they can react the same way. Yeah. Often, sociologists and psychologists who study this call this being grounded, right?
Yes.
I literally have my feet firmly planted on the ground. All this stuff can happen, and I remain consistent in who I am.
So a picture's coming to my mind. I remember talking to John Maxwell about this, about when we're not clear in our identity, we're not clear in who we are and what we value. It's almost like picture a park and a picnic table and an empty bag sitting on top of the picnic table. The smallest breeze can just blow that bag over.
Yeah.
You fill it with sand, and in our case, we're talking about a clear sense of identity, values.
Yep.
It can't blow over.
Yeah.
It's not carried by the whims of others who are dictating your identity.
Absolutely.
I like that picture, and that's really what you're arguing
Absolutely. For. Absolutely. Yeah. We want that person's identity to be filled with substance, right?
Yeah.
So what are some of the things that do this? I think we've got to have conversations with our students about what makes up our identity. It's things like values, right? What do we say is true about us no matter what situation we're in? Our passions. Mm-hmm. What do we care about?
Yeah.
The root word of passion is to suffer. So really the question is, what is so important to me that I'd be willing to suffer for it? Our strengths. What are the natural gifts we have inside of us that we could utilize? Our personalities, right, play a part in this. Our own history, maybe that's
backstory.
Family history or history of the community we grew up in, as well as our purpose. Where do we want to go? What are we after? Those are the things that we need to be talking about to help students get a sense of their identity. And it's going to keep them from, as you said, getting blown away by the wind, especially the strong headwinds of social media. So the key question here is, can your students articulate who they are in these categories? I think we need to be giving students more space to ask these questions.
Can your students articulate who they are in each of these categories? I love that. Yeah. Good. All right. Let's do skill number two.
All right. Skill number two is one you're also familiar with. It is simply critical thinking.
Yeah.
I think this one's pretty obvious. Students need to be able to engage critically with the digital world so they do not succumb to fake news, scams, emotional manipulation, or even, frankly, antisocial ideas. Sadly, there are a lot of those online. There's a fantastic book called Digital and Media Literacy in the Age of the Internet. It is quite a thick book. And I went ahead and read it for you, so you don't have to. But if you did want to dig in, you could. She discusses, Mary Beth Hertz is her name, who wrote this book. She discusses the practical skills students need to think critically while engaging with content on the internet. And she offers five excellent questions that students and, frankly, all of us can learn to ask whenever we're engaging with content online. And this is going to help a student stop short of just believing everything they hear, yes, or clicking on everything they see, right? So here's the questions that she suggests. Number one, we ask, who created this message? What's the author? Who is the author? Second is, what creative techniques were used to attract my attention? That's another really big subject. How did they use color? How did they use video? How were they trying to emotionally manipulate me? Number three is, how might different people understand this message differently?
Oh, that's a good question.
So putting yourselves into the shoes of other people. Question number four, what values, lifestyles, and points of view are represented in this or omitted from this message?
Yeah, yeah.
So asking, what was represented and what's missing here? Is there a side of the equation that they're not representing? And then the final question is, why is this message being sent? What are they trying to convince me of?
Yeah.
Man, if we could teach our students to ask these kinds of questions about the online content they're in, I think it would just naturally lead them to have kind of a more healthy, thoughtful reaction to that content online.
So what's the big question here?
The big question is, I would say, have you taught your students to ask these five questions, or frankly, other questions very similar to them, but just learning to ask questions as we critically engage content on the internet? If there is a place to be critical in our interactions, it has got to be with the content we read online. You
can't
believe everything you hear online. I think Abraham Lincoln said that. So.
Yeah. Good. All right.
That was a joke, by the way.
Yeah. Well, he was on social media, just one platform. Okay. The third and final skill set.
Yeah. This one, again, is one you've heard of. I really think it's a super important one for digital citizenship, and that is impulse control. We've said this for years here at Growing Leaders. In our world today, we do a lot more reacting than reflecting when we get engaged in the online world. And often when we think about the skill of impulse control, we align it with like stopping ourselves from engaging in self-indulgent behaviors. And that's certainly an important way in which to apply the skill, but it's not the only way, actually. In the case of processing information in online spaces, I think the skill of impulse control could keep students from merely accepting the first answer they come across, right?
Yeah.
My impulse is to go with the first idea that sounds good to me, but I think we need to resist that impulse and ask a deeper question. There was a great book in 2012 called Net Smart, and there was this media literacy expert, Howard Rheingold. And he suggested that students, especially, but all adults online, practice impulse control by utilizing this old method that's talked about by journalists. So if there's a journalist listening to this, this is going to sound very familiar. He says, Rheingold explains that journalists tend to triangulate their information. That's what they're taught to do. This means that they always confirm their information by finding three separate but reputable sources before reporting on something. So this is a great practice for us to take on to go, if we hear something online, the first instinct we should have is to Google that thing and see, can I find other people whom I trust who confirm that idea? If I can find three sources that I trust on a piece of information, I am much more likely to go, you know what? That sounds like that's true, right?
Yeah.
What if we could teach our students to do that, to learn to triangulate the information they find online? And that's my big question on this one.
It would solve a lot of problems.
It certainly would.
So good. The big question for our listeners to talk to students about would be what?
Yeah, just have you taught your students to triangulate the information
That's
they
good.
Find online? Don't just accept it first. Instead, ask, where else can I confirm that this is
true? Yeah. Andrew, this has been so helpful in such a quick amount of time. You have an illustration of the good that can happen if we do this that was student-led.
Yeah.
Why don't you do that and then talk about the resource we're about to offer our listeners.
Yeah, so a few years ago, I heard about a group of teenagers who were so sick of the online world that was frankly poisoning the world that they were growing up in there inside of the school. So the digital space was poisoning the physical space.
Yeah.
All the social relationships were struggling and all of that.
Yeah.
And what they decided is a group of, it started with a group of actually teenage girls who got together and they agreed. I actually think it started by them doing something in the physical space of their school, which was they started putting positive, encouraging notes on sticky notes in the girls' bathrooms. Mm. But they got this idea, what if we did the same thing in online spaces?
Yeah.
And they made this commitment that we are, for the rest of our high school careers, going to make a commitment to only say positive things to each other and about each other in social media, and making sure that we encourage our classmates to do the same. And that one single decision by a small group of girls totally transformed the culture of their entire school. And it became a place that that kids really liked coming to, rather than one like so many of the schools we go to where kids are just struggling, right?
Yeah.
And what if we had that kind of culture? I think it's possible, right?
Yeah.
But it's going to mean that we teach our kids to develop some of the skills and make space for them to develop some of the skills that we've been talking about here.
Talk about positive peer pressure. What an incredible sway that was, at least on that campus.
Absolutely. That's cool. Absolutely.
Well, thank you, Andrew. This has been rich
thank
and helpful. You. Talk about the resource now. I think that would be helpful for our listeners.
Well, you guys already heard about it during our ad break, but I just want to reiterate to you, we've got a really great ebook coming out. It's all about digital citizenship and the skills that students need in order to become great digital citizens in the 21st century. I've sort of clued you in. I've whet your appetite to this conversation, but I dig way deeper in this upcoming ebook. So if you want to find out more information about it, all you got to do is click the link in the show notes to find out about when it's going to release. I'm really excited about that. Well, as always, if you would rate this podcast, give us 5 stars on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts, we would greatly appreciate it. If you found this particular episode helpful, we invite you to share it with somebody that you're thinking of right now who you think might also enjoy it as well. We would greatly appreciate that. If you want to connect with us online, we are at Growing Leaders and at Tim Elmore pretty much everywhere you are. And then finally, if you have ideas for us, subjects for us to talk about, or maybe even people for us to interview, shoot us an email. It's podcast@growingleaders.com. We love getting those from you. Tim, thank you so much again for giving me the opportunity to talk about it today. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll see you next time.